Content warning, this episode of MeatBusters discusses diet culture and restrictive eating. Veganism is many things, a philosophy, a way of living, a social justice movement, but the one thing it is not is a diet. Remember this.
Protein deficiency.
Iron. B12.
Too expensive.
Ethically and sustainably sourced.
MeatBusters. Welcome or welcome back to MeatBusters, the podcast that debunks meat-eater myths and misconceptions about veganism. I'm Alicia, and I'm a vegan recipe creator and food blogger on thelishlife.com. If I lost you when I said veganism is not a diet, I don't blame you. But let's look at it this way. If veganism was truly a diet, all vegans would be eating or not eating the same types of foods. And yet, we have vegans who are grain-free, vegans who eat mostly fruits, vegans who consume nuts, and vegans who don't. Many vegans, including myself, just eat plant-based versions of all the dishes they were eating before going vegan. My diet still includes various cheeses and meats. It's just that the ones I eat don't come from animals, they come from plants. To go vegan is to adopt the belief that animals are not ours to wear, use, or consume. For someone who views animals as individuals rather than commodities, opting out of eating a burger made from a cow is no more restrictive than opting out of a burger made from plastic. To a vegan, neither of these options is food. However, a burger made from soy or peas or seitan is food. It's still a burger, but unlike the burgers made from a cow or plastic, this one is made with ingredients that vegans consider to be edible. When you look at it this way, you can really understand why restriction is not inherent to veganism. Rejecting the idea of veganism as a diet is crucial to understanding and implementing the practice of intuitive eating as a vegan. And who better to help us understand this than anti-diet dietitian Taylor Wolfram? Well, Taylor, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on MeatBusters.
Thank you, Alicia. I'm really honored to be here, and I'm so excited to chat with you.
Same here. So if you could start out just by introducing yourself, you know, who are you and what are you passionate about?
Yeah, definitely. My name is Taylor Wolfram. My pronouns are she and her, and I am a registered dietitian in Chicago in the United States. I've been an ethical vegan for going on 12 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. A lot has definitely changed in the vegan world in my time in it. So I've held a few different roles in my career as a dietitian, and I'm really lucky that a couple years ago, I officially, you know, quit my day job to work in my own business full time. So I have a private practice, and I do nutrition counseling and consulting and speaking and writing. And I'm really, you know, fortunate that I get to combine, you know, like my passions and my profession, which is really, really fun.
That's awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. And I noticed in your Instagram bio, you said that you are an anti-diet dietitian. And when you read that phrase or hear it at first, it sounds kind of contradictory. But what does it actually mean to be an anti-diet dietitian?
Yeah, it definitely does, right? Because the word diet is in the word dietitian. It's like, wait, what in the world? So this is a really great question. So anti-diet essentially means anti-diet culture. You know, so diet culture meaning, you know, restricting food to lose weight, you know, obsession with thinness, but also kind of the obsessiveness around quote unquote healthy food, and the toll that can take mentally and physically as well. So, you know, there's definitely deeper concepts within it, such as fighting, you know, fat phobia and fighting for the liberation of fat folks. And also, you know, resisting this idea that there is one correct way to eat or that, in order to be healthy, you have to, you know, really restrict your food. And also, I think resisting the idea that there is one picture of health, right? Like this thin, white, able-bodied kind of stereotype of health. So it's kind of a big movement that is rejecting all of that and centering more on very individualized food and nutrition and health.
Right. That's really great to know. And so how is your background, shaped your lifestyle as an ethical vegan and as an anti-diet vegan?
Yeah, I definitely don't have any, you know, when I think back to kind of like my path and my journey, you know, it's been a slow, steady process. I first was introduced to activism through animal rights when I was an undergrad, when I was a university student. So that was kind of my first involvement in being an activist myself. And I think over the years, I've learned more about various forms of oppression and how they're linked and how I can take a more consistent stance against them. So kind of from an activism standpoint, there's just a lot of me, you know, learning and growing there. But also I think, you know, my personal history in terms of kind of like the anti-diet part, you know, I was someone who grew up watching parents, step-parents dieting, always trying to lose weight. I have my own disordered eating history. And as a, you know, child and a teen, you know, I was really taught to be ashamed of my body, to cover up my body. And so there were, you know, a lot of things that I was conditioned to and socialized to, like so many folks, you know, to believe about food and my body, that required a lot of unlearning and healing and growth, you know, personally, alongside with my, you know, professional work as someone who is an anti-diet dietitian. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your background and your history that kind of led to where you are right now as an anti-diet culture vegan, as an anti-diet culture dietitian. This is all really great information, and I'm so glad that we're going to be able to have this conversation. So when we do talk about anti-diet, what we're really alluding to is this philosophy of eating intuitively, like moving away from restriction and counting calories and that obsession that you were talking about earlier. So can you explain this term intuitive eating a little further?
Yeah, definitely. And first, you know, I definitely want to acknowledge that there is much more to the anti-diet movement than intuitive eating. Intuitive eating is a specific framework that was created by two registered dietitians in the 90s. But the anti-diet movement, you know, these two dietitians didn't start that movement. You know, that's really like a fat liberationist movement. And there's also a separate but kind of parallel approach called Health at Every Size, which you may or may not have heard of. So I just want to clarify that, because intuitive eating is something that, even though it's been around for, you know, more than 25 years, it's really gone mainstream, it feels like, and has become very trendy. And I think some folks who aren't super familiar with, you know, fat liberation and the anti-diet movement may assume that it's just all intuitive eating. And I think it's really important, you know, to acknowledge there are a lot of folks in marginalized bodies and fat bodies and Black and brown bodies and disabled bodies who really founded and are leading that movement. And that among us registered dietitians, we have a huge diversity issue. Our field is overwhelmingly white and thin and privileged in so many other ways. So before I dive into intuitive eating, I just kind of wanted to give that little bit of background.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you mentioned Health at Every Size, because for anyone who's listening to this episode, in season one, I did interview Jenny Weiner, who is a health at every size therapist. So if you're interested in learning more about that, you guys can check out that episode. It's episode 11 of season one for a little more background. But thank you, Taylor, for speaking on that.
Yeah, definitely. And Jenny's great. And that episode was awesome. It's really wonderful that you've covered that. So back to intuitive eating. Like I said, it's this specific framework. It's called an anti-diet framework that was created in 1995 by Elise Resch and Evelyn Tribbley, who are two registered dietitians. And it's really this, there's 10 principles to it, but it's really all about, you know, connecting with your body and mind and spirit to help you make food decisions that are the best for you, and letting go of all of the external, you know, information that we're getting from the media and all of these, you know, pressures about how we're supposed to eat and how we're supposed to look. So the creators say that it's a dynamic interplay of instinct, emotion, and thought, which I think is a really succinct way to put it all together. I think a lot of folks think that intuitive eating is all about instinct. It's just eat whatever you want, you know, when you want, as much as you want, and you care about nothing else. And that's not really what it is. You know, there's also the emotional component. There's the thought component, right? Like using, you know, our knowledge and our logic. And the last principle of intuitive eating is called gentle nutrition. And so, it definitely isn't disregarding nutrition or health, but it's really empowering folks to connect with their bodies, to connect with their hunger and fullness cues, to learn which foods really help them feel satisfied, to, you know, learn how to give themselves permission to eat, you know, what truly brings them joy and helps them feel their best. So now that it's been out for a few decades, there's been over 100 research studies published on it, which is really great. Because, you know, we can say that now this is an evidence-based approach. And, you know, we have this data to show that using this approach is correlated with improved mental health markers, but also physical health markers, because I think a lot of people assume, you know, if I don't meticulously count, you know, calories or grams of carbohydrates or watch what I'm eating or restrict portions or whatever it is, then, you know, I'm just gonna eat, you know, French fries all day long, or then I will definitely get type 2 diabetes or something like this, you know, which makes sense because that's what diet culture teaches us, right? That we have to have this control. And if we don't, then really bad things are going to happen. But it's really beautiful to be able to see folks, you know, learn and practice intuitive eating and just have this new, you know, independence with food and their bodies, and to really honor their health in really genuine, personally meaningful ways. And to really see, you know, diet culture for the scam that it is.
Yes, it is such a scam. And unfortunately, it's a scam that has obviously made its way into mainstream vegan spaces. So one of the biggest misconceptions we have now is that veganism is inherently restrictive, which Jenny addressed on the previous season of MeatBusters. But then going along with that, we also have this idea that a lot of people perpetuate, which is that veganism is not compatible with intuitive eating, that you can't simultaneously be a vegan and an intuitive eater, which is obviously incorrect because I and so many others have been eating intuitively as vegans for many years. And anyone who takes a minute to look around will see that vegans are not a monolith. We don't adhere to the same diet or fitness regimen or even lifestyle, really, across all of us. So the only thing we share is this belief that animals are not commodities and therefore we shouldn't treat them as such. So all of that being said, why is it still so hard to convince people that these two philosophies, veganism and intuitive eating, are in fact compatible?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And that's a good preface, right, to remind folks that veganism is all about resisting the commodification status of non-human animals. And to me, you know, that really means, you know, we don't see animals as, you know, people that we're going to use or exploit. And so, you know, we don't view animals, you know, flesh and secretions as food, right? And so, like, in that sense, like, veganism doesn't feel restrictive. It doesn't feel like a diet. It's not something, you know, that I'm doing to, you know, lose weight, et cetera. But I think there's a couple reasons why folks may believe that intuitive eating, or excuse me, that veganism is a diet, or that it can't be, you know, that it can't, you know, coexist with intuitive eating. And I think there's definitely a mainstream misunderstanding about what veganism is. And I've really seen this even in the dietetics community, you know, among registered dietitians. And they even assume, a lot of folks assume veganism is a diet and don't necessarily understand the ethics of it, and that there is so much to it than just food. And so I think there's that misunderstanding that folks may just see it as this, you know, restrictive way to eat. But we also have to acknowledge the reality that veganism has been co-opted by diet culture, like so many other movements and spaces, and that there are folks, you know, actively portraying veganism as a diet, pushing veganism as a diet, you know, especially people in the quote-unquote plant-based sphere, you know, and kind of like the quote-unquote health vegans. It's also not limited to the health, you know, motivated plant-based people. I also see animal rights activists pushing very, you know, fat-phobic and healthist, you know, and misguided arguments for going vegan, because they think that any reason to get people to consume fewer animals is ultimately a good thing, which I don't really agree with. So I don't think it's coming out of nowhere, right? Because there is a lot of diety messaging surrounding veganism out there.
Right. And, you know, all of that being said, what are some ways that veganism, like true ethical veganism, and not this diet culture veganism that we're talking about, but what are some ways that true veganism and intuitive eating can be compatible and can work together to help people feel their best?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, vegans apply the intuitive eating principles the same way anyone else would. You know, there may be some unique nuances, but really on the whole, it's very similar. You know, a vegan using intuitive eating and a non-vegan. I will say, though, that, you know, if someone's veganism may be wrapped up in an eating disorder, that's a little bit of a different story. But like you said, if we're talking, you know, strictly ethical veganism, there's no, you know, dieting or eating disorder going on, then it's totally compatible. The situations where I think it might be a little, you know, there needs to be some nuance there is, for instance, when we talk about, you know, honoring hunger and cravings, you know, if someone is craving, you know, an animal-based food and they eat the vegan version of that food and they're still not satisfied, you know, that's something that I would want to dig into deeper. I'm, you know, just thinking hypothetically if this were a client of mine. Or also if someone is craving a food and they don't have access to it because maybe they live in an area where there aren't many vegan food products accessible, which is becoming less common nowadays because there's so many vegan products accessible and, you know, mainstream stores, even in small towns. But having said that, you know, it's still not as accessible as it could be to every kind of person out there. So I think there are some unique nuances, but in general, you know, there isn't like a separate version of intuitive eating for vegans. It's pretty much the same about, you know, letting go of restrictive mindset and rules, getting in touch with your hunger and fullness, you know, really honoring, you know, your body and the signals that it's sending to you, you know, that can all be done as a vegan.
Right. And it's actually really interesting to me when people think that these philosophies can't coexist, because I think intuitive eating is what
you know, something that ultimately brought me to veganism. And it just, you know, felt right for me. And I know a lot of other people have had that experience as well. But I'm also glad that you mentioned accessibility and, you know, health concerns. For example, if someone who is in recovery from an eating disorder simultaneously also believes that animals are not commodities, it's really important that we consider those sorts of situations. And I always like to remind people that the actual definition of veganism includes this phrase that says, as far as is possible and practicable. So theoretically, people who are in these situations, as long as they're doing their part and what they can to divest from animal agriculture, I think there's still room to practice veganism and intuitive eating in those cases.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And I think, you know, some folks tend to have a black and white view of veganism, but as we know, you know, we live in a non-vegan world and people are going to, so to say, draw the line at different places, right? Where they say, okay, I'm not going to try to go down a rabbit hole of researching, you know, the entire production process for every single product that I use to figure out if animals were used at some point. You know, some people may not. And so that is such an individual decision. And like you said, when it comes to accessibility, you know, and health concerns and ability, you know, doing as far as is possible and practicable, you know, that's vegan, and it doesn't make you any less of a vegan. And I feel like that's so important to remind folks and to try to keep this movement as shame-free as possible.
Absolutely. And, you know, whether you wake up one morning and decide you're going to go for it, or whether you choose to phase animals off your plate gradually, doesn't going vegan inherently require restricting foods?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's important to define what we mean by restrict. So when I use the term, I'm really referring to, you know, restricting foods due to fear of weight gain or maybe a misguided concern about health. And so in that sense, veganism isn't restrictive because to me, like I said, it's about, you know, rejecting the idea that animals are food. And so to not eat animals isn't really restrictive because it's not necessarily an option, right? Like it doesn't feel restrictive not to eat a rock outside because I don't see that. I don't see that as food. But like I said, for some folks with restrictive eating disorders, veganism may feel restrictive. You know, and some folks are able to recover from their eating disorder and be vegan, quote unquote, fully vegan. And some may really need to focus on recovery first before extending their vegan ethics to their food choices. And, you know, that's a very specific, you know, population. But other than that, you know, if someone is feeling really like actually restricted, like I am not getting full, I'm not feeling satisfied, I don't feel like I'm meeting my nutrient needs, you know, those are some red flags. And we need to look at how we can help you feel full and satisfied and nourished through vegan foods, you know, and dietary supplements as necessary, you know, with the resources and abilities and et cetera that you have. And if that doesn't allow you to be quote unquote 100% vegan with food, you know, that's okay. Like we said, as far as is possible and practicable. But in my experience, when veganism feels restrictive to folks, it's because they're also restricting what I call vegan fun foods, like, you know, vegan pizza and burgers and donuts and cake and cookies, or they're trying to restrict oil and salt and kind of falling for some of those diet culture, plant-based, you know, things. It's not like 100% ethical vegan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the foods are, you know, the burgers or the pizza or the salad, not the cows or the pigs. Theoretically, if you have access to these things, you can have all of those same products as a vegan, just of course, plant-based versions. So certainly restriction is not inherent or a precursor to veganism, but it's definitely nuanced, and especially when we're talking about eating disorders and other restrictive eating patterns, diet culture, those are some things that we need to be mindful of. And I see people on both sides tend to be very black or white. Like, there are vegans who insist that going vegan will help someone's eating disorder, will help their recovery. And meanwhile, there are non-vegans who insist that, you know, veganism is completely restrictive and incompatible with recovery and with intuitive eating. So it's important that we, you know, kind of look at the gray area and acknowledge that experiences differ from person to person. So all of that being said, what are some steps that we need to take to educate people about this intersection of veganism and intuitive eating, and also to reposition the vegan movement as one that is anti-diet?
Big question. and I love that you're asking it. And I think this is a really important thing to think about. And I see this happening a little bit more. And I think in recent, you know, conversations and happenings in the vegan world of folks who are contributing to other forms of oppression really being held accountable and called out in vegan spaces, not, you know, primarily, you know, fat phobia and weight stigma and healthism surrounding this diet culture conversation, more so around, you know, racism and anti-Semitism. But I see this kind of overall, you know, movement, this consistent anti-oppression movement to really focus on, you know, the intersectionality of oppressions and how veganism fits into that. And including, you know, the kind of anti-diet movement in that. So I'm hopeful that we're headed that way. However, it still feels like it's definitely, you know, like a loud minority of us vegans. So I think, you know, talking about it more, getting into those spaces where vegans tend to congregate, you know, which seems to be a lot of social media these days, and talking about these things, which is something I'm passionate about and I've been doing for many years, and helping people, you know, number one, understand what is diet culture and why is it harmful, along with, you know, fat phobia and weight stigma and healthism. And that's a big job. Because those things are, like I said, like, we're all conditioned and socialized to believe these things, but in some senses it should be easier, right, to help vegans understand that, because they've already seen, oh, like, I've been conditioned to believe that animals are food and that doesn't align with my values. And so in that sense, I feel like it should be a little bit easier, but it doesn't necessarily shake out that way. So I think just starting the conversations, and also I think, you know, obviously a lot of vegans are focused on non-human animals, you know, and liberating animals. And I think talking about how diet culture hinders that can be an important motivator for people as well.
Definitely. And I'm glad that you mentioned this about, you know, us vegans who do address these intersections being the loud minority, because I often forget that being a consistently anti-oppression vegan is, you know, not in the mainstream right now, because everyone that I follow, everyone that I surround myself with is, you know, certainly working to make sure that veganism is inclusive and accessible to all sorts of people. So,
yeah, it can be tough, you know. In one sense, it's really lovely and wonderful to create, you know, our little bubbles, right, of people who really agree with us, and the content we consume feels really, you know, safe and affirming. But on the other hand, it can sometimes disconnect us from, you know, broader issues or what's going on in the mainstream, like you said. And, you know, some of the things that have been happening lately or some problematic activists being called out, I'm like, wait, I've never even heard of this person, but they're like they are huge, but it's just because I'm in a completely different part of the movement. And so I'm like, okay, I think I need to stay in touch a little bit more with what's going on so that I can better, you know, speak to those issues.
Yeah, vegan Twitter has been an absolute dumpster fire lately, and I've had to do a lot of Googling to find out who some of these, you know, vegan activists are who are refusing to denounce things like white supremacy. So, you know, it is definitely alarming to kind of venture out of this like intersectional veganism bubble, I guess, that we have. But it's important that we pop that bubble and that, you know, it's really great to see more vegans speaking out about other forms of oppression, because my hope is that eventually that will be the mainstream. So are there any resources or people, books, articles, anything like that, that you recommend for anyone who wants to get started learning about diet culture, learning about healthism, and figuring out how to address it through their activism?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, reading the work of fat activists is really important, following them on social media, reading their books, listening to their podcasts. And I do want to acknowledge, unfortunately, there tends to be not a ton of crossover between, you know, animal rights, vegan activists, and fat activists, but there are a couple that come to mind. Chelsea Lincoln of Fat Vegan Voice. She's great. She's a vegan fat activist. And also Andy Tabar of The Bearded Vegans. So those are two folks to check out, you know, who are both, right? But also remembering, like we were talking about it, it's actually good to get out of, you know, our bubble of like every single thing that we believe aligning perfectly, you know, and, you know, reading the work of non-vegan, you know, fat activists. And so, you know, there's so many resources out there. Sonia Renee Taylor, her book, The Body Is Not an Apology, is really great. Lindo Bacon has a new book out called Radical Belonging. There's a new book out by the person who on Twitter is Your Fat Friend. There's so much out there. And if you're a scholarly person and you really like to read research, you know, if you just go to PubMed and type in weight stigma, there's so much that'll come up there. I also really love all the books by Sanctuary Publishers, more so along the lines of, you know, intersectional veganism and vegans of color and queer vegans and trans vegans. I think that's also important as we think about consistent anti-oppression and kind of divesting from white veganism. A couple other podcasts are The Vegan Vanguard and Goats and Oats that are pretty consistent anti-oppression. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's great. And then I do also want to give a plug. I just recently, launched an online course called Anti-Diet Vegan Nutrition. And it's really, yeah, it's a safe place, you know, for vegans to go and learn about nutrition without all of the diety nonsense and restrictive advice that comes with most other vegan nutrition information, especially if you're just, you know, Googling, or maybe you're following a lot of the like celebrity plant-based doctors. So it kind of tells you, you know, here's what you need to know. Here's how to meet your nutrient needs through vegan food and beverages and dietary supplements. Here's how, you know, some ideas for planning and preparing, you know, vegan meals and snacks. It touches a little bit on intuitive eating and health at every size. But it's definitely a resource that, you know, I spent a lot of time on. And, you know, there was just a really big gap out there. Nothing like this really existed before. So I'm just really excited to be able, you know, to share this with the world, because we need a lot more, you know, content that is covering both of these things.
We certainly do. And I'm so glad that you've launched this course. I think it'll be helpful for a lot of people. And for anyone who's listening today, all of the people and resources that Taylor just mentioned will be linked in the episode description as well as the episode webpage. So any of you can check those out if you're interested. But Taylor, thank you so much for joining me today and for having this really nuanced conversation about diet culture and veganism and intuitive eating. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Follow Taylor on Instagram at TaylorWolframRD and visit her website, TaylorWolfram.com, to learn more about what she does and read her blog. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the podcast. If you enjoy streaming Meatbusters, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. And if you are able, become a monthly supporter of the podcast through the Anchor FM link in the episode description.